I want to thank all of you for being here today for this amazing talk and communication and togetherness called Eureka, I've Found Myself. And actually what I didn't tell Donna is that there's a subtitle to this because I didn't want to complicate the issue too much. But the subtitle is, oh, you're going to love this. I hope you're sitting down. Complete Immersion in Your Most Real Self. Ooh, how heavy is that? Complete Immersion in Your Most Real Self. Now, before we get into this, I want to say what I'm sure you're tired of hearing me say, which I say so often, and that is that hopefully without taking anything away from the intended quality of this talk and our time together, in the talk, really, I think the talk is, it is inspiring, it is wonderful, and also, it's really a big fat excuse. It's just an excuse for us to be together and to sit in the middle of all the amazing blessings of life that happen when, quote, two or three are gathered. And the two or three or many more of us who are gathered here for this call, for this talk, for this togetherness, for this sharing, are joined here really open to letting and supporting and being a part of just the miracle of life as it happens. And these words that I'm about to express are certainly background music to something amazing. So I want to invite each of us to be in the amazingness of life. And with that, I'll get absurd again and say that, you know, to my chagrin, several weeks ago, that silly Rick Pathman, you know, one of the San Diego characters, once again suggested a topic to me for one of our teleconference talks. And the topic he suggested was total loyalty to your inner self. Well, you know, I really liked it, but you know how much I hate to do anything that Rick says. So I just, trying to, just brush Rick off, just made a note of it, put it on my desk, and I looked at it from time to time. Well, sure enough, over the past few days, it started speaking to me. And you know, funny thing, when it spoke, it looked just like Rick. It was the weirdest, strangest deal. But that aside, I decided to take his suggestion, total loyalty to your inner self, and twist it to my ever-so-creative, sordid mind's title of Eureka, I've Found Myself. And then, just to stimulate your great memory, I created the subtitle, Complete Immersion in Your Most Real Self. And I think the three big words are most real self. You know, it's a tricky thing to pose a question, who am I, or who is the real me, or who's the real you? And you might say, well, why is it a tricky question? Well, I'm so glad you asked, because I'd love to tell you what I think. Mainly because there are so many facets for each of us to choose from. For example, from a holistic perspective, we're persons who are spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical. So if someone asked you who you are, which one of those do you pick from that smorgasbord of four identities? Or if you choose all of them collectively, how do you identify with all of them at once? Likewise, you could say, I'm a human being. But, you know, there are thousands of definitions, millions of interpretations of what being human is. So what does being human mean to you, if in fact that's your answer to the question of who is your most real self? Finally, you could proclaim, and you knew I was going to get around to this, that you are really a soul, or a soulful presence. I'm sorry, I can't help myself. Or perhaps a soul-centered self. That one sounds sweet, doesn't it? But again, what does that mean to you, and how are you that? Well, today's talk is about you. And it's what I've subtitled, The Real You. Up front, though, I'd like to give you my usual speech to avoid any implication that there's a theoretically accurate or generalizable response to the question, who or what is the real you, because there simply isn't. The real you, in my sense of it anyway, is an individualized, custom-designed, tailor-made template created only for you. So your answer to the question probably isn't anybody else's answer. You know, I'm going to inflict on you in this talk. I'm just so proud of myself. A number of quotes, because I have just recently finished writing at least the first big fat draft of my next book called Soul Vision. And I included in there like lots and lots and lots of quotes. So I've been hanging out with quotes for the last few months. And I came across a quote recently, and it's by a freelance journalist named Brenda Euland, and it goes like this: try to discover your true, honest, untheoretical self. Well, I looked at that, untheoretical self, and that just grabbed me, and I thought, that is so clever, to be your untheoretical self, you know, the self that's not according to any theory. So there's only one choice that you have, alas, as we proceed further on the word path of this talk, and that is that you listen more deeply to that inner, untheoretical, custom-made inner source for your inspiration and truth, while your mind just might be entertained, and might not be, with the concepts of my words. So, let's go to the drawing board first and see who the real you might be from the angle of infinite creation. Oh, you gotta love that. So I woke up this morning, but then you probably already figured that out, with three delightful words just dangling magnetically before my visual mind. They're three words that we're all familiar with, but somehow they held a bit of a magical tone in the compelling way they danced together to the delight of my eyes in that early morning instant. The three words are, you ready? Isness, allness, and oneness. Isness, of course, refers to the very essence of life. Sometimes we call that essence God or Yahweh or Allah or Brahma, etc. But deeper than any name, it's the very source or wellspring or creative power that has no definition, no description, no tangible form. It just is. And likewise, we, you and I, just are. That isness of infinity is the isness, and it's our isness. It lives in the middle of our finite experience, and it's what makes us both finite and infinite. We are essence, isness, being, emptiness. We, you and I, are the unexpressed, non-informed mystery of life, and we hold and contain that essential power that literally lurks behind the throne of life. It's that essence that lives in you and me. It subtly whispers its truth. It's always prompting the next creation. It's infinitely empowering and motivating us. It's wonderfully manifesting itself, creatively inspiring our awareness, generously uplifting our spirit, carefully calling us to our truth. But it's by itself, just itself. It just is. And in that regard, I just have to share with you a quote from the Bhagavad Gita. And Cynthia Lane first shared this quote with me, I'm guessing 3 years ago. And it's in chapter 10, for those of you who just happen to have your copy of the Bhagavad Gita right in front of you. And it goes like this: there is no end to the details of my manifestation. I am the Self, that's a capital S, seated in the hearts of all beings. I am the beginning, the middle, and also the end of all beings. I am the seed of all beings. There is no being, whether moving or unmoving, that can exist without me. Whatever being exists, whether glorious, prosperous, or powerful, know that it has sprung from but a spark of my splendor. I stand supporting the whole universe with a single fragment of myself. That's essence. Allness, second word, on the other hand, is all about creation, or what expresses and exudes from that essence. It describes the very expression of created life, visible and invisible, real, imagined, multidimensional and three-dimensional, divine and human. Allness describes you and me in our vast, spacious, limitless, expansive nature. And I've come to see that even though in this three-dimensional experience we're specializing in specifically human expressions of this unlimited phenomenon called life, we're equally present to, and we're alive in and influenced by, and we're an intimate part of life's infinite and potential-filled allness. Brian Swim, a well-known writer in cosmology and evolution, I told you I was going to beat you up with quotes, wrote this in his book called The Hidden Heart of the Cosmos. The beginning and the end is a primordial encounter with the great abyss of beauty that we call the universe. Not to enter such moments of awe, not to wonder over such moments of majesty, not to live each day floating inside a colossal and intimate mystery, is to live a life that is deprived. End of quote. So allness is simply a word that says you're an everyday participant in the world of angels and saints, in the realms of the many universes and dimensions of life, in the primordial energies of animals, fish, and nature, in the lives of every human being, past, present, and future, in every aspect of life. Mahatma Gandhi once said, "The purpose of life is undoubtedly to know oneself, and we cannot do it unless we learn to identify ourselves with all that lives, and the sum total of that life is God." End of quote. Then there's that third word that found me this morning, oneness. What an amazing word. It describes the you that we all are. It refers to the dimension, lying and living somewhere beyond this three-dimensional realm, but really right in the middle of it too, where we simply don't see individuality and differences, where we see the inherent unity of all creation. Yes, this is the perceptual field, if you will, where we see what Martin Luther King Jr. once called the quote, inescapable network of mutuality. I love those words on his part. The inescapable network of mutuality. And what the naturalist and conservationist John Muir, as in the Muir Woods, referred to when he wrote, quote, whenever we try to pick out anything by itself, we find it hitched to everything else in the universe. So, when we talk about the human family, or our mutual interdependence, or our unity with God, or our oneness with all life, we're giving expression to the fact that there lives in you and me a profound connection to that vast world of allness in oneness. So you and I are one integrated, united whole. We're divine and human, multidimensional and unidimensional. We're every race and color, every animal and angel, all together wrapped up in one. We're all of that, both in our individuality and in some realm beyond individuality, but which occupies, again, the very same space in which we're sitting in this moment. So these were the three words that captured my attention early this morning: isness, allness, and oneness. And I'm sure that the same thing happened to all of you. You woke up this morning and there were those three words and you said, I wonder what meaning these have. I wonder if maybe by tonight it'll come to me why these were here. Anyway, here's my point. If I'm trying to find the real me amid all the possible identities available, I'll do well to start with this bigger picture and then narrow my options from there. For example, your identity, or your sense of your most real, core, central, personal self, may be more in the mystical dimensions of life. You may be a be-er. I love that. That's B-E-E-R. If you take the dash out, you get drunk. But anyway, you may be a be-er. That is, someone whose fulfillment is found in that quiet space of innermost isness, that central realm of inner peace, that infinite source of life that lies deep within. It's what we call your God self. Now, if that's where you feel most at home, or most in integrity, or most you, then isness may be your real self. If that's the case, then you'd do well to really hang out there in your daily focus, to center your important decisions on that inner source of truth, to live in daily conscious connection with that internal fountain of quiet strength. What though if you find yourself more drawn to, let's say, the allness of life? If you simply feel at home in the spacious, limitless vastness of life? If your sense of yourself is beyond the usual boundaries and definitions of human dynamics? or if you find the words freedom, openness, or vastness personally compelling. If that's your experience, then you'd probably do well to spend time each day experiencing the vastness of your own cells, or the limitlessness of life, or the largesse of your own expansive energy field. You might want to meditate on the wonders of infinity, or visualize yourself floating gleefully in higher or bigger realms of consciousness, or consciously decide to see the expanse of in every itsy-bitsy little detail of your life. Yes, if allness is where you feel most at home, or it's the space that you're most naturally drawn to, then allness may be a word to describe your sense of who your real self is. And if that's it, it's worth going for. It's worth living in. It's worth prioritizing, even claiming as your home, as your central identity, as the real you. As a third option, suppose you're naturally drawn to the experience of oneness. Suppose you feel innately allergic to judgments about right and wrong, or blame and condemnation, or morality or behavior. Whether those judgments are made by others or on the part of yourself. Or what if you're simply lousy at creating personal boundaries because you recognize the inherent beauty of everyone? Or you're confused about where you end and another person begins? Or you have total understanding of other people or circumstances or dimensions because you feel so one with them? So if you're like a victim of feeling compassion for everyone, feeling identified with everything, or if you sense the senselessness in the picayune distinctions, I love that word picayune, don't you? Or simply if you, in your gut, you know your inherent oneness or our inherent oneness, then this may be your central or your most real self. And if that's the case, you might do well to hang out in that consciousness that we're calling oneness full time. And when there are, for example, cataclysmic world events on the other side of the earth, maybe give yourself full permission to allow your compassionate consciousness to be there, to be present, to be loving, embracing, or blessing, or nurturing, or unifying with every person or dynamic of that circumstance. Or when someone does something that feels immensely hurtful to you, maybe experience that feeling not just as yours, but as one that both of you are sharing. And in that larger experience, you can arrive at a healing that's swifter and more powerful and more in accord with your unifying nature. And before we leave oneness, I'd love to share with you another short quote. I told you. It's from a good friend of yours, Chuang Tzu, an ancient Chinese early Taoist philosopher and spiritual sage. In fact, you were probably just reading his works this morning. Often referred to in our language as Master Chuang. He said, it's a simple one-sentence statement, "The world and I have a common origin, and all creatures and I together are one." So, we've looked at three possible senses of our real self. But wait a minute. There are lots more options to choose from. Just because I woke up with only three words dancing before my sleepy face this morning doesn't mean that the list is complete. For example, we've neglected the whole three-dimensional world of possibilities. After all, if you go out on the street, as you often do, and ask most people to define their real self, which I'm sure you also often do, won't they come up with some aspect of their human personality to describe it? So let's look at a couple of those possibilities that just might have your name on them. First, how about the whole phenomenon of love? Some of you might look into your heart right now, that treasure chest of unconditional embrace and compassion, forgiveness, and, well, love. And hear yourself spontaneously uttering words like, "That's me, I'm a lover." Or, "I care deeply about people or the planet or myself," or, "I'm deeply in love with life." So if you're motivated by love or driven by love or empowered by love, if intimacy or closeness or relationships are all important to you, or if compassion for others is dominant in your life, then it just may be that love is a central part of you, is a big part of your real self. And if that's the case, that is, if love feels like your home, or at least a strong home, then you may be a lover, whether of God, of life, of humanity, of others, of self, or of everything. And you'd do well, perhaps, to nurture that quality of self, to find your powerful source within love. The now deceased Maharishi Mahesh Yogi once said these words, quote, "It's what we do with our hearts that affects others most deeply. We love from heart to heart." And to me, that's not just a beautiful concept. To me, I can hear those words spoken from the heart as I express them. So let's try on one more possible three-dimensional identity before we stop here. How about the other human phenomenon of creativity or creation? We're all creators. As we know, one facet of our human life is that we all create, and we confidently assert that we're creators of our destiny and engineers of each moment's circumstance. I know you just used the word engineer in that sense earlier today. We're builders of our reality, and we participate intimately in the infinite spark of life, all the way from that spark's small bang in the subcellular life of our bodies to its big bang in the particular universe in which we find our planet spinning and moving. Now, I know I may be overdoing quotes from others in this talk, but I feel passionate about this next one. It's by Thomas Merton from his book called New Seeds of Contemplation. And it's probably five or six sentences. "God made the world as a garden in which he himself took delight. He made man," and forgive the word man, he lived back in the 1940s and 50s. "He made man and gave to man the task of sharing in his own divine care for created things. He let man decide for himself how created things were to be interpreted, understood, and used. Thus, in his intelligence, man, by the very act of knowing, imitated something of the creative love of God for his creatures. While the love of God looking upon things brought them into being, the love of man looking upon things reproduced the divine idea, the divine truth, in man's own spirit." End of quote. Now, if you find yourself excited about the creations of your life, for example, creating your career or a business or creating a relationship or creating a child or creating your own happiness or a myriad of other outcomes and experiences, the creativity that you are in awe of may hold a special place close to your real self. In fact, it may be a genuine part of your realness, and it just could be that the isness, allness, and oneness of life speak to you through your own creative energies or spark. Wow. We started with the question, who is the real you? And we've looked at some enticing possibilities. And my sense is, chances are, home for you, or for who you really are, may be a blend of a few of these dynamic phenomena of life. But here is the important thing. The important thing, I believe, is that each of us follow our own nose, or our intuition, or our gut-level sense of who we are and where we live in life. In other words, we do well to ask the question, who am I? Of our heart more than our minds. We do well to seek our truth in the core of our being more than in our trained thoughts. My sense is, and I just really felt like sharing this with you, that all of us show up in this human world, not as a tabula rasa, but we come here complete with an inner arsenal of amazing qualities, orientations, gifts. Equally important, we bring with us a remarkable, empowered, dynamic, and infinitely prepared self. Maybe put quotes around self, complete with a true knowing of who we are. And ideally, at least, we've armed ourselves with that real self in order to use it in navigating our way through life's various adventures and to guide ourselves through the sometimes narrow byways of life's challenges. It's our deepest, purest, most powerful place of inner authority, our all-important resource in life's storms. It's our center of truth in the elegant creation of our lives, that real self. And I grant that most of us purposely go through much of our lives forgetting about this deeper, most real, very grounded, remarkable self, or perhaps forgetting where we misplaced it at birth with all the other commotion going on. And I grant also that it often stays buried in the deeper echelons of our hearts or souls for years or even decades, until a time when, right on cue, it surfaces and it throws its arms around us and it welcomes us back home into its inner embrace. My question is this: is now the time for that homecoming? Is now the moment to recapture in bigger or better ways than ever before who you really are? To step more fully into the strength and power of that real self that you are? Is now the time to own and find your groundedness in that deep source of personal truth? To turn your whole life, perhaps, over to the wisdom and the learned counsel of your true self? Is now the moment to give yourself passionately to who you really are, with full trust of your utter perfection, your innate beauty? Is now the moment to be present here on earth, no longer as a passive passenger of life or as someone fearfully hiding from the power of others, but as truly an engineer of your own remarkable creativity, of your personal ingenious imagination? Is now the moment to love yourself as you really are, in that spontaneous act of loving yourself, and find the enormous, unending love that's everywhere in life? Is this your time to take total delight in your own permission, in fact, in your innate authority to be you, to be you, and to offer yourself as a loving servant of life in the most fully empowered sense of the word servant? And finally, is this the moment to be your real self, for better or for worse, in sickness and in health, till death do you part, just for the heck of it, for the fun of it, for the full adventure of it, for yourself? Is now the time for you to look at yourself through the eyes of your all-knowing soul, and number one, fall smashingly in love with the awesome, wondrous, beautiful, elegant creation that is you? Or two, to discover anew the wonder of life that plays out daily in your every thought and feeling, and to become that wonder in every moment of your everyday experience? Or number three, as you look at yourself through the eyes of your all-knowing soul, is it time to become fascinated again with the creative splash of life as it plays its fountains within your unique perceptual field? Or number four, to discover afresh how delightful you are, how precious you are, how beautiful you are, how cherished by every other life form alive that you are. Yes, I want to say that again. How cherished you are by every other form of life. How exquisitely divine you are in your every fiber, pore, cell, and electron. Number five, is it time, as you look at yourself through the eyes of your all-knowing soul, to rediscover within your own depths and heights the giant that you are, right here and now and forever, not only in your higher dimensional self, but equally in your three-dimensional self, your human self? Number six, is it time to come back home to the most amazing, wondrous, and phenomenal creation you know, yourself, in your realness, in your wonder, in your isness, your allness, your oneness, your loveliness, your creative genius, your natural self? And last, as you look at yourself through the eyes of your all-knowing soul, is it time? Is it time? It just may be. It just may be. Let's recall, if you will, the subtitle of our talk, Complete Immersion in Your Real Self. You know, I don't think it matters that you and I have played part-time in our realness in the past only. Nor, I think, is it important whether we feel completely ready to own who we really are. What does matter, I think, is this, that we open ourselves to the miracle of being real. So, in whatever way your real self is grounded in isness, allness, oneness, love, creativity, or any other expression of life, of self, there's a superhuman magic that's innately present in any and all of these selves in you. There's a miracle-creating quality in your nature, a transformational energy in your being, a divine touch in your person. It's one that can make your realness, your brand of self, come to the fore. It can escort your real self to its rightful place in your inner core. It can create your realness as your intimate ground. It can simply help your real self take over your life, if, of course, you want it. What matters is that you and I simply open our eyes and recognize the truth. Yes, just recognize the truth. It's that simple. So what do you see when you look at yourself through the eyes of your all-knowing soul? First, do you perceive your real self? I think so. And then what does that self look like? Is it, and I'm just offering some options here, but please supply your own words. Is it elegant, gracious, classy, simple, pure, essence-like? Is it spacious, grand, unlimited? Is it integrated, unified, one with life? Is it loving, compassionate, feeling for others? Is it creative, ingenious, entrepreneurial? Is it beautiful, lovely, and lovable? Is it all of the above, some of the above, none of the above? I love multiple choice. Your soul's eyes see the truth. That's just how those eyes are programmed. It's what they're for. It's their nature and purpose to show you who you really are 24/7 and right now. So whenever you see through your soulful eyes, and we'll all see something a little different, the important thing is you see you. You see the real you, and that's worth getting excited about. You. Now, when I look at you through the eyes of soul, I'd like to share with you what I see. I see, actually, five things. One, I see God. That's right, God. God in the illusory, imagined clothes of a human being. God in the ostensible clutter of human stuff. God in the seemingly impoverished clothes of apparent smallness. God in Halloween disguise as you. God having a good time being you. God having a great time playing on earth as you. First, I see God. Second, I see, when I look at you through the eyes of soul, I see everything. Yes, I see simple essence in your core, vast allness in your aura, integrated oneness in your body, embracing love in your heart, dynamic creativity in your energy, life's pure vitality in your cells, luminous light in your neurochemistry, all the realms of life present throughout your entire being. I see everything, and it's you. Third, I see everyone, every human being, past and present, as an intimate part of you, not as someone separate. I see every plant and animal, every flower and fish, every volcano and earthquake, every fire and water, every wind and sky, every planet and star, every galaxy and constellation, every universe and dimension of life, all alive in you, expressing in you, finding their fulfillment in you, creating in you and through you, loving life as you. That's who you are, as I see you through your soulful eyes. Fourth, I see endless love. Yes, I see the giant heart of life replicated in your personal heart. I see the unconditional love of the divine imitated in your loving nature, the healing power of compassion itself living in your veins, and the very soul of love, having taken your name, inhabited your body, and loving life through you and as you. You are love. And fifth, I see wonder. Absolute wonder. Yes, the wonder, the splendor, the beauty, the magnificence of life, and everything imaginable that leaves me breathless, speechless, leaves me falling on my knees in gratitude that you exist, in celebration of the miracle that you are, and in awe of the very fact that, as if it's Halloween again, all life is dressed as you. It's in this spirit that I'd like to close this talk with two more quotes, and I know I've made this talk a little longer than usual, and I apologize. And actually, this time I mean the apology, as opposed to most times when I say that. Two more quotes. The first one is also written by Thomas Merton, who was an American Trappist monk. And this short writing describes what he called a personal epiphany that he had. It happened spontaneously on March 18, 1958, when he was standing on a street corner, people watching, in Louisville, Kentucky. Here's his self-described experience. Quote, "Then it was as if I suddenly saw the secret beauty of their hearts, the depths of their hearts, where neither sin nor desire nor self-knowledge can reach, the core of their reality, the person that each one is in the eyes of the divine. If only they could all see themselves as they really are. If only we could see each other that way all the time. There would be no more war, no more hatred, no more cruelty, no more greed." And this last sentence I love. "I suppose the big problem would be that we would fall down and worship each other." Finally, the second quote in the last part of this talk was written, actually, today, by me, just for this moment. It's a bit of a poetic expression to honor the beauty of the real self that you are. And I mean it to be a personal message and offering to you. Here it is, given in love. "A token to you, radiant being, human being, divine being. A token of gratitude to your beauty, you of refined dignity and grace. A token of love to your inspiring presence, you bearer of light and brilliance. Yes, a token of honor to the divine radiance that you are. Will you receive this token of gratitude, love, and honor from me, who am but a simple witness of your magnificence, yet a pure presenter of your unveiled truth? And in accepting my official token, as one accepts a well-earned prize, will you accept and receive all that it describes, all that it symbolizes and implies, all that it speaks about the real you? A soulful token to you, elegant expression of all life, a heartful token to your boundless nature, to your endless grandeur, to your infinite splendor. A passionate token of awe and celebration in honor of you as infinite presence, in tribute to you as life's sweet voice, to acknowledge you as our and my pure delight. This token to you, now aglow in your heart, warmly shares with you, now and forever, its pure, warm touch. Thank you very, very much for a beautiful, beautiful time together."